Q1. Children are smarter than we give them credit for. Transgender people are superheroes. It's worth saying that. We live very difficult lives. We face unbelievable discrimination. This is a show about a boy who puts on a magic ring and his hair grows long. But if you look up at the message of this show, it's a good message. If this were about a transgender character, which it's not, but if it were, what would we be saying? We'd be saying that gender is fluid, that there are lots of ways of being human, and that we should respond to all the people who live on this planet with love.
All right, it is the Rebecca Juro Show. How you doing, everybody? It is a rainy, rainy Thursday here in New Jersey. Oh, my goodness. Boy, you know, it's like been all week. It's like the wrath of God coming down. I don't know. Oh, my goodness. Welcome to the end of spring, I guess. But anyway, how you doing? It is the Rebecca Juro Show, and we've got somebody. I'm very excited because tonight we've got Jennifer Finney Boylan, who, of course, I would imagine most of you know. In fact, all of you should know, because she is probably the best well-known media figure and author in our community. And I'm very excited to have her on. And in addition to all that good stuff, she is also a board member of GLAAD. And we're going to talk about GLAAD a little bit because they've been making an effort recently. There's been a lot of talk and some visible effort on the part of the organization to make the organization a little bit more trans-inclusive, be better at promoting trans voices, trans issues, that kind of thing. We're going to get into that with Jenny Boylan, and we're also going to get into a whole bunch of other stuff. Some of the media concerns that I've had, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about her books. We're going to talk about the media, some of the stuff. The clip you just heard at the top of the show, she was talking about Shizhou. Of course, the new cartoon show, we covered that a couple of weeks ago on the show, and we're going to get her take on that because in addition to all that other stuff, she also writes a series of children's books. And so we're going to get into that with her. That'll be coming at the bottom of the hour. So stick around for that. It's going to be great. I'll tell you, I'm going to start off with something tonight that, we're going to get into this with Jenny because I also want to get her take on this as a board member of GLAAD, because I know she, I'm sure has something to say on this. At least I hope she does. There was an incident, over the past week, where there's this show. It's a talk show, left-leaning radio talk show that is created by Clear Channel, which is the largest radio channel, network, I should say, probably, in the country. Very conservative, traditionally. I remember back in the day, several years ago, one of the stations they own is a New York rock station that plays here in my area, and they used to advertise George Bush rallies on their network. I don't think they did that too much after a while because, you know, honestly... I don't think that flew too well with the rock and roll audience. I think rock and roll audiences they want to hear rock and roll. You know, they want their DJs to be playing rock and roll. They don't want them to be playing politics. So I don't think that worked out too well for them. But in any case, getting back to where my point is, this show, the name of the show is Lex and Terry, and they had, I want to, in fact, Mr. Mike, I know you have this handy. They were having a conversation on the air, and they said something that was just absolutely unbelievable. Mike, why don't you run that clip?
A lot of good videos, but at times it depresses me, is worldstarhiphop.com.
Because that's the one that I was looking at, because there's a teen that shot a tranny after finding out it was a man.
Yeah, yeah.
After they had a little sexual encounter.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes World Hip...
I don't blame him.
World Hip... WorldStarHipHop.com can get really...
Might have shot his ass,
really
too.
Depressing.
Oh my god.
Yeah, depressing is right. Depressing is right. I mean, this was just unbelievably stupid. I mean, forget about the tranny thing. All right, you know, I've heard people say this, who say, oh, you know, use the tranny word, blah, 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 blah. You know what? Get over that shit. All right? I mean, yes, okay, we consider it bad form, but you know what? The rest of the planet hasn't quite caught up with our community on that one yet. We're working on it. But I tend to forgive and forget on stuff like that. Let's be honest, because most people don't see tranny. They haven't grown up with tranny as a pejorative. We are trying to change that. But we haven't yet. So let's work on it. But let's also not freak out. What obviously the part that the community was angry about was the part where he says, "Oh, I would have shot him too." Okay, first of all, it's not a him. All right, but, you know, all right, ignorance, I'm even willing to let that go by. But advocating physical violence, no, that you should know better. Well, so what happened was Kristen Williams, who is the blog mistress of Trans Advocate, wrote this up and posted this on Trans Advocate, had a post, and I happen to be doing my daily news crawl, which I do every day. I'm looking around, and I always hop by Trans Advocate to see what they've got going, and I see this, and I'm reading this. I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe they actually are letting this play on Sirius OutQ. Not Sirius OutQ. Sirius OutQ is the LGBT channel. Sirius XM is what I meant to say. And so what I did was I said, you know, the one person who I respect and I think is the most qualified to take on this situation is Sirius OutQ host Michelangelo Signorelli, who, as many of you know, hosts a daily show, news, information, talk, commentary, LGBT related. He'd been doing that show for a lot of years on Sirius OutQ. I figured this is the guy who should take this on. So I sent Mike the link, and Mike in turn sent it up the ladder to one of the higher ups at Sirius XM, Senior Vice President for Communications, Patrick Riley. And he got in touch with me, called me, asked me if he could if I could help him get in touch with Kristen over at Trans Advocate. I gave him the link for her personal blog, and apparently he got in touch with her, spoke to her right after she spoke to me. Shortly thereafter, I guess about a day or so afterwards, Sirius announced. Well, let me tell you what Mr. Riley told me. Mr. Riley told me, and this makes perfect sense. Those of you who listen to talk radio, commercial talk radio, you know that. There are certain shows in local. If you have a local station, very often they'll have a local person who's on the air at some point, or sometimes even a series of local people who do local news, sometimes local talk, local interest shows, things like that. They also very often carry what's called syndicated shows, which are shows that are done from a studio, and various networks and various stations around the country carry them. Such as, you know, well-known famous hosts like Rush Limbaugh and Tom Hartman and Bill Press and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all these guys who you hear on different stations. Now, of course, Sirius is not the originator of this show. This show is a Clear Channel show. It was created by Clear Channel, produced by Clear Channel, and they don't have, just like a local station doesn't have the ability to censor Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity when they say something idiotic. Of course, then they'd have no show, but we won't go there. Sirius does not have the ability to censor Lex and Terry. So what happened was apparently there was stuff going on behind the scenes, and the end result of this was that the Sirius XM ended up dropping the show, which to me, I think that's justice. I think, you know, you screw up, you do something like that, that's wrong, and there should be a price to pay for that. You know, I say this as somebody who shot my mouth off behind this microphone for years, And I've gotten called out, even from people within the community, from time to time, for various things, and that's fair. If I'm going to put my words out there for public consumption, then I have to expect that my listeners are going to call me on it when I say something stupid. And that's right, and that's fair, and that's the way the business works. Unlike Lex and Terry, I am not... I'm not making any money doing this. There's no money exchanging hands here. So I don't have a job to lose. So nobody can fire me or kick me off their network, because the only way you're listening to this is if you either are listening live or if you downloaded the podcast once it's up. That's the way you listen to this show. So I can do those things and I don't have to worry about that. But that doesn't mean that I don't have a responsibility to be the kind of host that my listeners expect me to be. And so it bothers me a little bit. I, again, stuff that clearly stems from ignorance, I have a hard time getting worked up about. Stuff like tranny, stuff like inadvertently calling this person who is a she, a he, or a him. Yeah, it's annoying. Yeah, it bothers me. Yeah, it's even worth writing a quick note to the host and saying, hey, you know what? That was a she, dude. Absolutely, totally fair. But I don't get worked up about it, because that's ignorance. Ignorance is curable. Ignorance is curable. Especially if you have somebody who's saying, I realize I made a mistake. And say, okay, well, you made a mistake. You screwed up. But here's how to do it correctly. Here's how to say the same thing, but not offend. And I think it's fair that when you're going to talk about the news of the day, when you're going to talk about current events, when you're going to talk to a community that is as rich and diverse as ours, and especially particularly if you're a host that basically is on the left side of the political divide, you have a responsibility to not say stupid shit. I mean, really, that's what it boils down to. Don't say stupid shit. Okay? And when you advocate saying, I would have shot somebody too, anybody, it doesn't matter who it is. If you advocate picking up a gun and doing violence to another human being, you know what? I'm sorry, but you have crossed the line. It wouldn't have mattered if we were talking about an African-American person or a Jew or... It wouldn't have mattered. What matters is this guy advocated physical violence against someone else because they were different. And that's where the issue is for me. You know, and that's one of the reasons, you know, I wanted to start off with that story, which, again, I'm going to get Jenny's take on this a little bit later. But I wanted to start off with this story for a reason. And the reason is because this is exactly the kind of thing that we need organizations like GLAAD, who are formerly the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. Now they say that they're no longer the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. They're just GLAAD. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but I don't know. Maybe Jenny can explain it. But we need organizations like GLAAD to take this kind of thing on. But in this case, in this particular case, GLAAD came into this at the end. Really, all the stuff had been done. Tristan Williams had written her article. I had seen the article. I had passed it on to Mike Signorelli. Mike Signorelli had passed it on to Patrick Riley. Patrick Riley had contacted me and Kristen, and whatever was going on at Sirius behind the scenes had already gone on. And it seemed like GLAAD kind of swooped in there at the end and said, okay, and we're talking to this person and that person, which is great, which is great. Okay, because, you know, I don't know who at GLAAD saw it first or when they saw it or anything else. But I would have liked, I don't know. It just seemed to me like GLAAD was trying to squeeze in there when, you know, most of it had already kind of happened already. But that's, you know, I'm glad that they were concerned enough to be able to go and take action at all. And because, let's be honest, I in the past we've seen things that you regularly listen to this show, and you know I've had my issues with GLAAD. Most notably, one of the things that I've gone off about in the past was when they released this ad. This is going back, I guess, about 6 or 8 months. They had an ad featuring Ellen DeGeneres back when the Million Moms or one of those moms organizations was freaking out that she was doing ads for JCPenney. And they had this ad saying, 29 states, someone like Ellen can be fired, blah, 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 blah. And then, which is great. And then in teeny tiny little letters at the bottom, on a little asterisk, they say, oh, yeah, and some form of, oh, yeah, by the way, transgender people, too. And I was like, fuck you. Who the fuck do you people think you are? What, you're better than us? You get full page type at the top of it, we're reduced to a footnote? Fuck you. I mean, I'm sorry. That's just how I felt. Okay, now I realize, of course, the folks at GLAAD weren't thinking in those terms. But that's how it came across to me as a trans person. And I was, and again, if you've been a regular listener of the show, you know I did some pretty hot rants on that. And it seems to me that after that, I think GLAAD took a little flack, and about a few other things that we won't get into right now. And I think they've recognized that, and I think they're trying to do better. And I, you know, for all the time that I call people out and organizations out and activists and all these folks, I also try to be just as quick to say, you know what, here's an organization that's making an effort. I may not agree with everything. I may not think they're doing enough. I may think they should be doing this when they should be actually doing that. But I try to be fair in the sense that I'm as quick to commend as I am to complain. I mean, let's be honest. I've said this, how many times have I argued with the Human Rights Campaign, for example, where I've called them out on any number of things, from the flag protest thing to all these different things. And yet, when I see them making an effort, I'll say, hey, you know, that was nice. How many times did we play that Fred Sains clip from Hardball? You know, where he went proactively on his own and inserted Enda into the discussion with Chris Matthews. I appreciated that. I liked that. I played it. I lauded them for that. They deserved it. They got credit. I'll also say I've seen them making an effort around the Enda executive order and around Enda itself recently, and that's good to see. I think there's more they could do. I think that as the wealthiest organization doing LGBT rights in the country, I think they could do more. I would like to see them do more. But I can also appreciate the effort that they have been making. It was a while back that I remember hearing Chad Griffin dodging the question of whether the Senate should take a vote on Enda. Now they've come out and said, yes, we want to vote on Enda in the Senate. I appreciate that. They deserve to be noticed for that. That doesn't mean I'm not going to call him out when I see him do something I don't like. I mean, you know me. I'm not going to keep my mouth shut when I feel I've got something to say, whether it's about Human Rights Campaign or GLAAD or anybody else. But you got to be fair. And what incentive? It's just like politicians. It's just like the politicians. If you don't give them credit when they do the right thing, then what's the incentive to keep doing the right thing? If all you do is complain and you don't commend when they do the right thing, well, I mean, these people are human beings too. They're going to say, well, why should I bother? Nobody's going to notice or care. So I try to make it a policy, and I'm not always successful. Hey, you know, I'm human too. But I try to make my best effort that when I see something I like and something I appreciate, I try to make a point to do that too. And one of the things that I like and that I saw, to give you an example, right after GLAAD said that they were going to change their name from this long description to just the GLAAD, is that Melissa Harris Perry had a feature on trans people and issues on her show, and GLAAD sent somebody to introduce that they were going to do more in this. But who do they send? They send a gay male actor. Wilson Cruz was like, what? What? I mean, you know, you want to increase trans representation and you want to, you know, promote trans issues, so you send a gay male guy? Because, you know, gay men never appear on MSNBC, right? I mean, come on! And so, you know, it got to the point where, but then, just last week, they sent Jenny Boylan out to do a whole round of interviews on MSNBC about Shizow, which I appreciate. So I didn't like the Wilson Cruz thing, and I'll call that out. But I also like the fact that they sent Jenny Boylan. And I say, you know what? Okay, that's an improvement. It's along the lines of what I want to see. So I'm going to be just as quick to say good job on that. Because, frankly, to me, Jenny Boylan is one of our most credible spokespeople out there. I only wish we saw her on television and in the media more often. You know, there's certain people who we have who I think do a really good job of representing our interest, and other people sometimes not so much. But, you know, and I'm not going to name names here, but I think we have to be fair. I really do. Now, we are going to have Jenny Boylan on the show in about 5 minutes. Meantime, we have got Nomaly Brennett. She used words from civil rights activist Cornel West, who is a major cool guy. I've actually met him. And her song is called Settle Down. We'll be back with Jenny Boylan in 5 minutes.
Brother Moses wasn't born to settle down. Brother Moses wasn't born to settle down, settle down. He was born to rise. Like the leaf to the cure, like the shore to the waterline.
Let's get out of here.
Once you're out of the dark, you're
It is the Rebecca Juro Show, and we have got someone who I've been really hoping to interview for a while now, Jennifer Finney Boylan. Jenny, are you there?
I'm there. Hi, Becky. How are you?
Good. How you doing? It's so great to have you on. You know, it's been – somebody remarked to me the other day, they were absolutely right. They said, you know – why the hell haven't you had her on yet? What are you, nuts?
I know. Like, why?
And I,
why?
And I was
why?
Forced to
what
agree.
Did I say?
And,
what did I do?
And so I am so glad to have you on and to get a chance to talk to you. And I not only because you're probably the most well-known and well-covered trans person out there. You really are. I mean, you've done more media appearances and have more. I mean, you've written best-selling books and you know, you really have a media presence that's really beyond what most of us have. And so,
yeah, is that a good thing? I don't know if that's. I hope it's a good thing. I certainly don't do it for the notoriety. I think sometimes I get frustrated because I think in the media. Attention comes my way. The story that they want to cover is the story of my life rather than the story of you know, my work as a writer, and I mean, I know it, to some degree it's my own fault, but I always like it when I get to talk to people about my writing, which is what I do, because the fame doesn't really do a whole lot for me. I know there are some people who really, you know, want to be, you know, transgender spokespeople. For me, it's always been, you know, it's kind of like a second thing after the writing, but, you know.
I can totally get that, but on the other hand, I would also argue that one of the reasons why you're as well known as you are is because of your writing about your life. So it
the thing that we know is that telling stories is probably, and seeing stories is the way that people come best to understand lives other than their own. If you think about the effect that just something like Will and Grace or Ellen DeGeneres had upon the change in the popular culture's perception of what it means to be gay or lesbian in this country. So that's why I always think it's good work to be doing, because if you tell, and I always tell this to people, like when trans people ask me, what can we do? And I say, tell your stories. Get out there and let people know you, because when people experience the stories of our lives, we become human. There's this thing somebody said to me after I was on the Oprah show a long time ago. Someone wrote me a letter, and she said, you know, the weird thing about you, Jenny Boylan, is that you almost seem like a person somebody could know. I always thought, yeah, almost, I guess. But I think what she meant by that is that we generally don't think of transgender people as familiar as our neighbors, as our English teachers, and yet we are. The media has this way of capturing us either when something terrible has happened, which happens, as you know, all too often to our people, or when the other media meme is of someone's mid-transition, and they tend to capture us, you know, at this moment of incredible vulnerability. And also, to be quite honest, incredible narcissism. I think a lot of people stray into the camera right at a moment when they're not thinking globally, when they're not really thinking much beyond themselves. So anyway,
I tend to agree. And you know, here's one of the things. I also want to let people know, in case they don't, in addition to all the work that you've done and all this stuff, you are a board member of GLAAD. And that was, in addition to everything else, I wanted to have you on because one of the things that we've seen from GLAAD over the last few months is they've come out and said, we're going to make more of an effort to be inclusive and to promote trans people and issues. And as I was talking about earlier in the show, one of the things that was a little frustrating for me back several months ago was when they did this Ellen DeGeneres ad, and they had, in 29 states, you can be fired for being gay. And then at the very bottom of the page, in teeny tiny letters, they said, oh yeah, and in 34 states, you can be fired for being transgender. And I saw that, and you know, my immediate gut reaction was, these people just don't get it, do they?
We're talking about GLAAD?
Well, yeah, and this was a GLAAD ad. And then more recently, we saw GLAAD when they originally announced they were giving up the long form name and going to just GLAAD. And they went, they sent someone to Melissa Harris Perry to do a feature on trans issues. It was Wilson Cruz, a gay male actor. And my thought immediately was, what, you couldn't find a trans person?
It kind of
bothered me, but then I saw just I guess about a week ago or so, you did a whole series of appearances on MSNBC, didn't you?
Yeah. So if your question is how is GLAAD trying to be more inclusive?
Yeah, because like I said, in the past I've seen stuff that indicates to me that they need some help there.
I guess I would argue that this will be the boring part, but I want to make clear, you know, I'm on the board of GLAAD, but I don't speak for GLAAD. I'm not the CEO or even the you know, the press officer or anything. If you're on the board of a nonprofit, your job is to provide counsel, and that counsel is not always taken.
Right.
Right now, our acting president is Dave Montez. Wilson Cruz is our national spokesman. Mm-hmm. So those are the people who really speak for GLAAD. So as I talk here, I am speaking for myself, although I do my best to make sure that GLAAD knows my opinions. And GLAAD, I think, has always done some trans work. It's now about a third, the last 3 or 4 years, it's about a third of the advocacy work that GLAAD does is oriented around trans work, and there's a lot of work to be done. We have to educate the mainstream and gay and lesbian non-trans audiences about these issues, and we have to educate the media and respond to anti-trans media coverage. I think a lot of education needs to happen just among gay and lesbian non-trans people when it comes to transgender people. So change comes when public support is behind you. So one of the ways that GLAAD's done that is by working on projects like the I Am Trans People Speak series with the Massachusetts Trans Political Coalition, and providing media support to get the Trans 100 list visible. All that said, education still has to happen with the media on these issues. Last week, there was a, as you probably know, horrible murder of a transgender woman, Fatima Woods, and GLAAD reached out to the local media outlets in Rochester to correct the all too common misidentification with the wrong names and the pronouns. So GLAAD does stuff like that all the time, and it's not always in the public eye. And you know, whether GLAAD is doing enough work for trans people, I guess, is for someone else to say. What I've seen with my own eyes is that they are doing quite a lot of work, and increasingly it's going to be just a larger and larger portion of what we do. You've got me on the board. You've got Marcy Bowers on the board.
Oh, I was not aware of that. That's great.
Yeah, so you've got, it's still not enough, and so not enough trans representation on the board, so we're gonna change that. There are plenty of trans people who work at GLAAD, both in Los Angeles and in New York. At the same time, if trans people think that GLAAD is not doing enough, then we have to change that, and we need to
absolutely.
Make sure
and I would point out that I have personal experience. You know, one of the people who helped set up this interview is Rich Ferraro in the New York office of GLAAD, who's terrific. And, I've met a lot of those folks, and they're all terrific. They're all dedicated. And my concern has always been that sometimes not that they're against or anything. They just sometimes in some cases, they just didn't get it. That there were things, there's like, you know, if you really thought this through, maybe you'd have done this a different way kind of thing.
I don't know if that's true. But I know what I can tell you is that things are changing, and that it's a great thing. You know, GLAAD is one of the two biggest LGBT organizations in this country, and if it's going to continue doing its work, we're going to have to put trans people at the center of what we do. And part of that means, quite frankly, educating gay men and lesbians about what it means to be trans.
Well, because that's one thing our allies
frequently don't get the issues either, and we need to, how do you change the world? You change the world by building allies and growing your numbers.
Absolutely, and actually that brings up a point that I wanted to get to with you, is one of the areas where I think we really need some help and some GLAAD effort on is what we see on cable news and MSNBC particularly, because I've said a number of times on the show, I'm a big MSNBC fan. I watch Rachel Maddow. I watch Chris Hayes. I watch the weekend shows. I watch a lot of that stuff. I enjoy it. But what we see is Maddow has never covered a trans issue once, never had a trans person on her show in her entire history of the show. We see guys like Steve Kornacki. We've seen some of these other folks. And what happens is it seems that we get better coverage from the non-gay hosts. And that to me doesn't make a lot of sense. So from Rachel Maddow, all we hear is marriage, marriage, marriage. And, if we want to hear about other issues, we have to go to Melissa Harris Perry. And it seems like there's this focus on between Don't Ask, Don't Tell and marriage, and really nothing much on workplace rights, public accommodations rights. And there's plenty going on in the mainstream media, in the newspapers. There was just a great feature that I actually participated in on CNN, not on the network, but actually on their website. This is happening in other places, but it seems like with the exception of Melissa Harris Perry and a couple of features on Thomas Roberts, we really aren't, it doesn't seem like we're, there's much penetration there, I'm wondering, is this something that concerns GLAAD, and is there something that they're doing about that?
Well, I'll agree with you that Melissa Harris Perry is remarkable. The show that she was on with Wilson Cruz, on which GLAAD announced its rebranding of itself, I thought was spectacular. And not only because of the good coverage of the issue, but also because she was so well informed and so sophisticated around trans issues. I can't tell you what the story is with Rachel Maddow, whom I love.
I love her
if
too.
She's listening to this, I'll say, have me on.
I mean,
the thing is, as you know, trans visibility is really where gay visibility was 20 years ago. And when trans people are on scripted TV, a lot of the time we're depicted as victims of violence or as villains. One thing that GLAAD is doing is we're trying to push positive stories of trans people and young adults, one of whom is the girl named Jazz, whom you probably know. MTV did a Q&A with her. They ran her video from the GLAAD Media Awards. And we've also, we took a story like the story of Coy Mathis, who, do you know Coy, this amazing, adorable 6-year-old whose school told her that she couldn't use the girls' restroom, and GLAAD worked with the Transgender Legal Defense Fund to bring the story and her amazing family to millions of Americans through appearances on TV news, including Katie Couric. So, MSNBC, if you're out there, let's get with the program.
Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, because I know you're not only an autobiography writer, you also write a series of children's books.
Yeah, I'm not just the president of the Hair Club for Transgender Women. I'm also a client.
But I wanted to ask you especially about this book, new cartoon, She's Out. We've seen all this controversy. Oh, is it transgender this and is it, bad image and all that? And I watched a couple of these episodes online. I didn't see any real agenda there. I'm wondering if you, as somebody who has actually written content for kids, if you see, is there a positive message, and does it go beyond just the average kid? Do you think there's anything in there that really speaks to transgender children?
Well, gee, that's a hard one. I think it's a lovely little show. I think it's wonderful that there is this gender variant child.
Yeah. this was my fantasy when I was that age. My God, I wanted to be Batgirl so badly. It was,
it's not. I don't know if it's trans relevant. The superhero is not. He's not trans. On the other hand, he puts on this magic ring and he gets these fabulous go-go boots. So to the extent that it shows kids a message that not only is it good to be different, but in fact you can be a superhero by being really different, and that's wonderful. I don't know that it really has a whole lot of relevance for real trans people, other than in a general sense of promoting good humor and raising kids' aspirations. I mean, when I look at that show, the thing I think is that, you know, if you want to talk superheroes, you know, it's the transgender people I know, the real ones, the real men and women who go through this every day. They're the superheroes. They're the people who face discrimination. They're the people who are at risk for violence. They're the people who are at risk for losing everything in the worst case scenario. And they're the people who find the courage to do these amazing things. So, you know, the right wing was all upset about She's Now. I think that they were just trying to shoot fish in a barrel. And, you know, it's not really, you know, if they want to talk to a real trans person, you know, we're here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny because I once had somebody, I was at an event, and it was shortly after I came out and I was living full time, and I had somebody at this event come up to me and say, "Oh, I think you're so courageous." I said, "No, I'm not courageous. I have friends who are 6'5" and 250 pounds and go out in a skirt. That's courageous."
Actually, you know what I'll say? I hope you know what I mean by this. Sometimes I think when I was really courageous was before, when I was a boy and having to keep this hidden all the time and just carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. That took, you know, incredible bravery. And you know, there are trans people who cannot come out. There are trans people who do come out and they have a hard time. All those brothers and sisters are courageous. Right now, I don't think what I do doesn't take any courage at all. You know, I do see plenty of courage out there among people who are dealing with these hard issues. You know, we were talking about my kids' work before, which is a series called Falcon Quinn, which is a series about kids who turn into monsters and get sent to a special school where they're taught how not to be monsters. You know, the message of that, or the question at the center of that book was, what is better, to learn to be something you're not, or to embrace your true self if your true self is like a zombie? When I have spoken at grade schools and middle schools and high schools about the Falcon Quinn series, maybe you wouldn't be surprised. Kids totally get this. Kids totally understand what it is, the choices that people have to make, and not just trans people, but the issues around being your true self. So in a roundabout way, I think people who watch She's Out are going to get a positive message around that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. Another thing I wanted to get your take on, we were talking about at the top of the show, was recently there was this, just last week, there was this radio talk show called Lex and Terry. Glad got involved with. And they made this really horrible remark that we played at the top of the show.
They sure did.
And what was... what I was going to say was what was interesting to me was that Kristen Williams of Trans Advocate published a post about this. It was the first place I saw it. I saw this. I sent it to Michelangelo Signorelli, who then in turn passed it up to somebody who's higher up at Sirius. And the end result, of course, was that it was dropped from Sirius. And it seemed like at the end, and I wonder if you share this perception, that GLAAD kind of swooped in at the end and said we've spoken to the agent and this and that, and kind of like cast itself as one of the leaders of this charge, when in reality, the activism around this, both in outside and inside Sirius, had really kind of already happened And I've heard criticism from people in the community that say, oh, here we go again. It's another gay organization that's swooping in at the end, trying to take credit for other people's work, blah, blah, blah. And I'm kind of a little torn about that because, you know, I always want to give credit where credit is due. But it also did seem to me like GLAAD kind of zipped in there at the end to kind of get its name in there. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
I think that's unfair, and I think it's untrue. I think that GLAAD takes the lead on all sorts of issues, some of which never, making it into the public eye. The idea that GLAAD somehow is sweeping in to get credit seems I just haven't seen it. GLAAD is okay. Still working with Clear Channel on that because you know Lex and Terry have apologized. Clear Channel has not, and GLAAD is at this hour still on the case to make sure that this doesn't happen again, and that they in fact provide guidance for all their shows, and it speaks out against anti-trans content like this.
Okay, because we know, those of us who follow the history of Clear Channel, and I've kind of, you know, doing what I do, I kind of follow the industry a little bit. Clear Channel, this is not the first time Clear Channel has come down on the hard conservative side of something, or at least appeared to. They used to advertise George Bush rallies on their rock and roll radio stations
I
listen to.
But they're going to realize at some point that transgender issues... go beyond politics, and that, you know, it's not that being trans is not something that liberals do. You know, I know many, many trans people who are conservative Republicans.
Absolutely, we've had them on the show.
As you do as well. And GLAAD is not a political organization. We are, in fact, forbidden from taking explicit. We can't say vote for so and so or vote for someone else, but we can take stands on the issues, and so we have to use the relationship that we have with Clear Channel and other media outlets to, you know, to play a long game. Really, that it's, you know, I mean, the Lex and Terry thing was horrific, but you know, it's not the first. I hope it will be the last, but if it's not the last, we need to kind of play a long-term strategy with these people so they understand that, you know, when you insult transgender people, you're not just insulting, you know, a bunch of socialists in Northampton. You're insulting all Americans because it's, you know, if one person is not free, no one is free.
Right. I think there's a perception on the right that we're all these radical crazies with anarchy shirts and pink mohawks or something. You know, it's kind of the impression that I get, oh, you know, those people are out on the coast in New York City and Los Angeles and San Francisco.
Well,
I have been
protested about a half a dozen times during the last 10, 12 years that I've been doing this. And half the time it is by conservative right-wing people, but another half of the time I've been protested by some transgender people who think that I'm not radical enough.
Huh.
And I would have to say, you know, it may be the reason for this is that my focus is on families, on mothers and fathers and children, and it's not, as opposed to any of the other you know, hundreds of good issues that a trans activist could choose to emphasize. But those are my issues, and, you know, I think that raising a family as a transparent, openly and without shame, I think raising children is one of those radical things you can do.
Well, that brings me to my next question. That brings me to my next question, and Mr. Mike is reminding me of something here. Oh, he's reminding me. Okay, well, if you can stick around for a couple of minutes, I have a couple more questions because we're supposed to go to break. He's reminding me we're supposed to go to break, but fortunately, we don't have these things known as commercials here, so if I decide I want to go a couple minutes extra, I can do that. But I wanted to ask you about your books because I read She's Not There. I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. But you've got a new one out called Stuck in the Middle with You, and I haven't had a chance to read that one yet, but I was wondering, She's Not There was about you and your transition, but Stuck in the Middle with You is really about your family. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. And if you consider Stuck in the Middle, is that a sequel to She's Not There, or is it more of a standalone, or how
it's,
do you...
It's a standalone book. And I should say, first off, that She's Not There, which I will proudly say was the first best-selling book by a transgender American.
That's
celebrated
awesome.
Its 10th anniversary just this year, and there is now a new 10th anniversary edition available both in bookstores and also at your independent bookstores and online and Amazon and the like. And it contains two new chapters, one by me that brings the story up to date, and another one, an epilogue written by my wife, talking about our lives together. So if people are fans of She's Not There, they should know there is more to the story now.
Cool.
And Stuck in the Middle with You is a standalone book. It's really about the difference between motherhood and fatherhood, and the thesis of the book is that having a father who became a woman has helped make my sons into better men. It also talks about what it means to be a non-traditional family. And to some degree, I think it says that every family in this country, everybody, in some ways, is a non-traditional family.
Yeah.
I would agree. I mean, it's interesting because I actually have two 10-year-old twin nephews who have not yet been told that Aunt Becky used to be somebody else. And we've been waiting... You know, between my brother and I, and we talk about this all the time, what age would be appropriate, how far, we know that they don't have any trans kids in their school, do we bring it up now, do we wait a couple of years? I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, I'll turn it back to you, since they're your nephews. What does your heart tell you?
My heart tells me to wait a little while because, you know, I'm always cautious because, you know, at the age of 10, I'm not quite sure that they get it. And they just accept me. I'm Aunt Becky. And that's what I've always been to them. That's what I've been since long before they were born. I transitioned about, it's going on my 16th year now. And so they never knew anyone else. And part of me says, you know, I would like them to know, and I'd like them to be sophisticated as they grow up and become accepting. And at the same time, I'm very comfortable with the way things are right now, and I'm not so sure I want to change that. And so I've been really struggling with that.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you will know when the time is right, and if it doesn't seem right, it seems like there's no downside to not getting around to it. On the other hand, you know, you never know what people know. I remember coming out to someone who I thought didn't know about me, and at a certain point, you know, I said, well, actually, you know, I knew years ago. I read your book, Jenny, which is true. I mean, I guess in some ways I think stealth for me is forever ruined because
I
wanted stealth, I could have kept my mouth
I can relate to that because the minute these kids start using Google, that's it.
Yeah.
They put my name into Google, they'll get 6,000 results.
And
three-quarters of them
I'm
will
sure,
say trans.
Like you, I'm sure there are times, I mean, there are times when I think, you know, I wish I had my privacy. I wish that people in perceiving me would see a woman without history. But on the other hand, then I think, you know, of what the world was like for me when I was 15 or when I was 20. And I would go to the library in search of books about people like me and would find nothing. Or else I would find things that were just completely wrong, like hilariously wrong, like injuriously wrong. So now I know that people who are that age who want to learn more about themselves, they can turn on your radio show, Becky, or they can read She's Not There, or they can read books by Helen Boyd or Jameson Green, or any of the, you know, dozens of really good books and media outlets there are now that tell the truth about us. And you have to think that's a fair trade for our privacy, don't you think?
I tend to agree. I mean, I knew when I started doing this radio show and when I started blogging, I knew that that was it. You know, I could have one or I could have the other, but I wasn't going to get both. And I made my choice. And I guess as you did and as other trans people who are publicly known, you know, people like Chaz Bono, who, well, maybe, I don't know if he actually had a choice considering who he was. But, you know, I guess it's a choice that you just, you have to decide what's more important to you. For me, it was more, I saw a need, I saw a lack of, you know, trans relevant coverage and voices and people. And I said, you know what, I can help do something about this. I can do something, and so I'm going to do it because I'm going to do it. Because
well,
was...
and you've helped a lot of people as a result, and you know, the work that you do is really, really important and has really, you know, opened a lot of hearts, I'm sure.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I am a fan of GLAAD, and then, you know, at the same time, when I see them do something that I consider to be a misstep, I get angry because it's not, oh, you guys are bad, you're terrible. It's like, come on, don't you know better than that? That's what frustrates me. It's the same thing that frustrates me with MSNBC. It's like, come on, you guys are so good at what you do. How could you be so ignorant about this important issue? How could you be so narrowly focused as to only cover marriage and military service when there are so many of these other issues that you're completely ignoring? That's
well, again,
always been
I would
a frustration
say that
for me.
It's certainly covering issues other than marriage and the military. I don't know about MSNBC. I don't speak for them. I wrote an op-ed for the New York Times about, I guess it was about 3 years ago, called "We Want Cake Too," and
yes,
it was a piece that said, "Look, I'm thrilled that there are more and more states, including Maine, where you can marry whoever it is that you love." But you know, none of this addresses the issues that trans people face. I mean, it sort of does, in that so many trans people are also lesbian or gay. You know, we have a lot of other issues that are urgent, and you know, and people's lives are at stake. And you know, there are what? Times when I want to say, look, you know, on your way back from the wedding chapel, please give a thought to your trans brothers and sisters, who, let the record also show, were the ones who were actually at Stonewall and who helped start this whole business. And GLAAD is all over that. GLAAD leads with that message. And if you, I guess I want to say two quick things about GLAAD before we end. If you see discrimination against trans people, you can go to GLAAD's website, and there's a tab there for report defamation, and that will trigger a case report and get GLAAD on the case.
I have to say, I've worked with GLAAD in the past in a couple of different situations, and they have always been right on the money, always willing to help, always willing to use their resources, you know, and so because of that, like I say, I am a fan. I have been a fan, and yet at the same time, I also say, you know what, I love you guys, but, you know, I'm
well, you know,
I'll,
when
also,
we,
I think
when
it's
we get
fair
it wrong,
to criticize when it's
it wrong,
fair to criticize. So
you, when we get it wrong, you let us know, and that's your job. That is the job of all of us, and GLAAD, there are more and more trans people working there. There are more of us on the board, and you know, so I mean, I am GLAAD. Marcy Bowers is GLAAD, and yeah. Our voices are the voices that are part of that wonderful organization, and
absolutely.
As Groucho Marx said, you know, they can't all be gems.
If we ever
get it wrong, believe me, trans people are not shy about letting me know, and then we get on the case and we make it right. Because guess what? Yeah. There's a tremendous amount of work to do.
Absolutely. Jenny, I want to thank you so much for coming on, for taking the time to come and talk to us. This was really great.
Awesome.
I hope you'll come back.
I would love to, and thank you so much. The time just flew.
It absolutely did. We got to do this again because there's so much to talk about, and it seems like there's a new story every week. So,
we'll have Random House. We'll send you the new book, and if you want to talk more about motherhood and fatherhood, that's a whole conversation right there.
Absolutely. Let me read that, and then we'll have you back on, and we'll get into that because that's a great topic.
And in the meantime, thank you for the work you do. You're a great advocate, and I'm it's such an honor to have been on the show.
Right back at you.
See you later.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good night. Bye bye. All right. And that was Jennifer Finney Boylan, probably the most acclaimed author, media figure, and all around cool person in our community. So I want to say thanks. We are overdue for a break here. So we are going to, Mr. Mike is going to play you a lovely tune from Lucas Silvera and the Clicks. And this is called Cry Me a River. We'll see you back here in 5, gang.
You were my sun, you were my earth, but you didn't know all the ways that I loved you, no. So you took a chance, made of the
I'm the voice of spring. I bring you some little goodies from the forest.
You won.
It's the Rebecca Jura Show. Thanks for sticking around. All right, wasn't Jenny Boylan great? She is awesome. I love her. She's such a good writer. If you have not yet picked up her books, She's Not There and Stuck in the Middle with You, I recommend it. I haven't even read the second one yet, but she's a really great writer. And for somebody who I someday aspire to be a good writer, she's awesome. I strongly recommend, go out and buy those books, read them. Good stuff. I'm looking forward to having her on again, once I get a chance to read her second book. And, we will definitely let you know when we're going to do that. But anyway, we got some other stuff to talk about here. Let's move on. One of the things, that just happened today, was President Obama held a pride celebration at the White House. And of course there was a lot of talk about, well, what is he going to say? Is he going to talk about ENDA? Is he going to talk about the executive order? What's he going to say? What's he going to do? You know, let's not forget, we just had two protests, in fact, since the last time we were on the air. Boy, Get Equal is wasting no time, I'll tell you. Get Equal not only had a protest where Get Equal activist Ellen Sturtz confronted Michelle Obama at an event, and basically called out her husband for his failure to sign the executive order. And frankly, I thought she didn't handle that very well. In my personal opinion, you know, there are a lot of people who feel, well, you know, you shouldn't be going after the first lady. She's not an elected official. Da, 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 da. Well, okay, that's fine as far as it goes. But she was acting as a spokesman for the Democratic Party, and this was a $500 a plate admission. If you wanted to talk to the first lady directly, that was $10,000. Okay? She was up there on the stage for people who had already donated $500 or $10,000 and asking them to give even more. She was acting as a spokesperson for the Democratic Party and as a fundraiser. And I'm sorry, Mrs. Obama, but that makes you a political figure. If you don't want to be involved in politics, then don't be. Nobody says you have to be. You could be Laura Bush. You know, I mean, you can be Betty Ford. You can be Pat Nixon if you want. Nobody is saying you have to be a political figure. But when you step into that arena, well, then I'm sorry. But then you are representing the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party and your husband, who is the head of the Democratic Party, are the ones who have failed us. You know what? If you stick your hand in the fire, sooner or later, you're going to get burned. And once you stick your hand in the fire by yourself of your own free will, you got no right to complain. I'm sorry. I think it's bullshit that people think, oh, we shouldn't dare be rude to the first lady, blah, 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 because she's wonderful. And you know what? She is wonderful. She's great. I think she's a terrific person. I think she is an incredible role model for kids and for women and for men, for that matter. I think she is a wonderful example for the nation and for everyone. But that doesn't change the reality. I think her husband, President Obama, is an excellent role model in a lot of ways. But that doesn't mean I agree with every policy. That doesn't mean that I think he's perfect, that he can do no wrong. Okay? And I'll tell you something else. Because I've been seeing this on the net, and it's really been pissing me off. It is not racism to call someone out on policy. It is not. I don't care if they're black. I don't care if they're green. I don't care what they are. Okay? But if you are representing an organization or a political party that people have problems with policy, which is what this is about, you know what? That's not racism. And people who are bringing that into the mix are wrong, and they're doing not only a disservice to Get Equal and to our community, but to Mrs. Obama as well. I'm sorry. Okay? Get off that shit. I'm sorry. Okay? But just because Michelle Obama happens to be an African-American and Ellen Sturtz happened to be white, it does not automatically mean that there was race involved here, okay? Because you can be damn sure that if we were talking about a white first lady and a black activist, or white and white and black, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It is irrelevant. We're talking policy here. We're talking a failure to keep promises. That's what we're talking about. And you know what? President Obama, as far as I'm concerned, did himself a little bit of good at this Pride reception, but not a whole lot. Mike, why don't you play that clip we've got?
We've got to end LGBT discrimination in the places where we work. You know, Susan wrote me and said, if I have a concern, it is that there's so many LGBT men and women who contribute to the wealth and growth of our nation, but they're still not protected from harassment in the workplace. And I share that concern. In 34 states, you can be fired just because of who you are or who you love. That's wrong. We've got to change it. There's a bipartisan bill moving forward in the Senate that would ban discrimination against all LGBT Americans in the workplace now and forever. We need to get that passed. I want to sign that bill. We need to get it done now. And I think we can make that happen, because after the last 4.5 years, you can't tell me things can't happen. Look around. We've got gay and lesbian soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines who are here today. We've got married couples from places like New York and Washington State. You've got a couple of guys here on stage who I don't think anybody in their high schools thought would be the president, the vice president of the United States. So don't tell me that things can't happen when we put our minds to them. The genius of America is that America can change.
So what's missing from this speech?
Well, yeah, see, the problem is, of course, you know, it's not that he supports ENDA. We know this. But here's the problem. The problem is that the rhetoric doesn't match the action. He was supporting ENDA publicly in 2007. There was an op-ed that was published to LGBT media in which he promised to use the weight of his administration to fight for ENDA. He has done nothing. Zippo. He has made no effort, and his spokespeople have avoided the issue every single time they've been questioned on it. We've seen the executive order go from "I support" to non-committal once he was president, to now all of a sudden Obama spokesman Shin Inouye is calling it hypothetical. What we've seen is not just non-action, but an actual backing away from those promises. You know what? This is the guy with the bully pulpit. If he wanted to stand up and say, we need to put this into law, if he really wanted to make an effort, we know he can do it. We've seen him do it with immigration. We saw him do it with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We've seen him do it with over and over with any number of important issues. When the president wants something to happen, when he's genuinely committed to seeing it happen, he works for it. He doesn't just give lip service to it. And that's what we've been getting from this president and this Democratic Party. Lip service. No action. We haven't seen the Senate take a vote on ENDA in 17 years. That's not credible. We have seen the Democratic Party, the last time that they brought ENDA up in the House, throw trans people under the bus. Thank you, Barney Frank. Under the bus to make it easier to pass a bill in the House that went nowhere in the Senate because Harry Reid never introduced it. And now we've got him. Oh, yeah, he's coming back. And Harry Reid is saying, when will we get action? Soon. Yeah, remember the last time we heard Harry Reid say soon? Yeah, that was 4 years ago. We're still waiting for soon, Senator Reid. When is soon? Okay, because do you mean soon in the cosmic sense, in terms of millennia? Do you mean soon as in terms of tomorrow or next week? Because I don't get it, because it doesn't seem, what it seems like is once again, we've got lip service coming from our government, coming from our president, coming from our leaders in Congress, and no action behind it. Okay, yes, we've seen these letters that were signed. That was great to see. Okay, we saw Democrats put themselves on the record. Okay, we still haven't seen a vote. We still haven't seen Harkin take it up, and despite his promises. Well, now, first it was May, then it was June, now it's July. We're seeing the same old bullshit all over again. The same thing that we saw in 2009. This is 1 month. Oh, we've delayed it to the next month. Now we've delayed it to the next month. Oh, geez, sorry, we ran out of time. Remember that? Okay, and they're going right along doing the same thing, the same way as we saw last time. Why am I not rah-rahing? Because I'm seeing the same thing repeat itself. Okay, and you want to prove me wrong? I would love to see it. I would love to see it. Prove me wrong. Take the vote. Now we're hearing, oh, well, maybe sometime in July. We're not sure. You know, I mean, what kind of bullshit is this? Okay, now we just saw today another Get Equal action at John Boehner's office. Okay, and according to the activists, the quotes that I've been reading, it seems like these folks have no reason to believe, just like most normal people who read the news and pay attention to these issues do, that there's absolutely no reason to believe that Boehner will ever bring ENDA up as long as he's in charge. But yet, we hear Obama, yeah, okay, we're going to get this done, and, you know, rah, rah. It's like, what magic wand do you think you have, Mr. President? Okay, you can't get these Republicans to cooperate in the House, House Republicans to cooperate on anything else, except for maybe one bill, one or two things. You can't get that. But somehow, magically, they're going to do a 180 on Enda? I mean, what frustrates me most is that they buy this crap. They think we buy this stuff. That we know, that we don't understand what kind of a house we have. That we don't read the newspapers. That we don't have internet connections. That we can't see what's going on here. And this is what it is, this is the Obama administration driving the whole workplace rights issue into the ditch and then saying, oops, sorry, so sorry, we're moving on now, which is exactly what they did to us in 2009. And then they wonder why we don't trust them. Well, why should we? What do we have to trust? We've waited 5 fucking years for these people to do something. And they've got nothing. I mean, that's the problem, I think. You know, Obama is perfectly happy to throw a few lines of rhetoric out there. But he's not willing to stand up and actually lead. You know, lead, you know, that's what, like, leaders are supposed to do. That's the problem here. We don't see the leadership. Where is the leadership? That's what I want to know. And that's what frustrates me about Barack Obama. And that's why I was glad to see this protest with Michelle Obama. I was glad to see the protest at Boehner's office, which I thought was exactly the right thing to do. I just don't see. I mean, yeah, could I be wrong? I guess. I mean, I don't live in Washington, D.C. I'm not connected to insider people, at least not a lot, but maybe a few, but not a lot. You know, but what I'm hearing is I read in the paper that even the staffers of these in Congress don't see any effort being made on the White House, by the White House, to push these issues. And then Obama comes out at a cocktail party and says, yeah, we got to get this done. And then disappears. And, well, you know, here we go. I mean, we heard this last year. We heard it the year before. And we heard it the year before. I mean, I wish somebody would give me a reason. Give me a reason to believe. Please. Give me a reason to believe that things are going to be different this time. I would really like to know. I would really like somebody to be able to, you know, tell me I'm wrong. Prove to me. Show me I'm wrong. Say, you know what, Becky, you've got it all wrong, and here's why. But you know what? I'm still waiting. You got the answer? What do you think about this? Do you think, are you as fed up with this as I am? Do you think it's time that we finally had some action rather than words from these people? 928-277-4921. Give us a call. I mean, because I'll tell you, I have gotten to the point where I am just so frustrated because I don't see any change. You know, I got plenty of hope. I don't see the change. I'm not seeing the change. I see the same scenario that we saw in 2009 replaying itself word for word, line for line, delay for delay. And, you know, I'm expecting, how can I not expect the same result? Delay, delay, delay. Oh, sorry, we've ran out of time. Too bad, so sad. Go back to the end of the line. We'll call you. Have a nice life. I mean, really, I am so sick and tired of hearing the same thing. If Harry Reid or Barack Obama or Nancy Pelosi or anybody else wants me to believe that this is real, you know what? You got to do something. And that doesn't mean coming out in front of a microphone and blah, blah, blahing about how we should and this is the right thing to do. Well, you said the same thing in 2009, and it never happened. So again, it comes back to the same question. why should we believe you now? Especially when there is a bill, there is an executive order, I should say, sitting on the president's desk right now, today, ready to go, and he is refusing to sign it. I want somebody to explain to me why. Why? Why is it that he can eagerly sign an executive order to protect the rights of undocumented non-citizens to work in our country, but he can't sign one to protect the rights of American LGBT working families? I want somebody to explain that to me. I want you to explain why undocumented workers get a signing ceremony at the White House and we get hypotheticals. We get a backing away. I mean, just whose pocket is this guy in anyway? I mean, who's he helping? ExxonMobil? I mean, is Obama really so deep in the pocket of big business? Is he so scared? I don't believe he's scared. I mean, this is the guy who came out in favor of gay marriage. Did it destroy his presidency? Has he taken a whole lot of heat on that? Think about it. You watch television, right? Republicans really didn't give him a very hard time about that because they knew it was going to hurt him. But somehow, marriage, an issue so controversial it's constitutionally banned in 31 states right now, although they're working on repealing at least a couple of those, I know. Okay, that he can come out in favor of, but a bill, an executive order, and a bill, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, that enjoys far more support, that is not constitutionally banned anywhere in the United States. Oh, well, that's too controversial for us to touch. Oh, and we have got a call on the line from one of our friends of the show. I'm excited to hear from Dion Stallworth. How you doing?
Hey, Becky. How's it going?
Good. Now, I understand you got something to say about Barack Obama. Fire away.
Look, I share your frustration with Enda. I share your frustration on any number of issues with the present administration. Now, God knows it could be a hell of a lot worse than it is now. Can we agree on that?
Absolutely. Oh, okay. I've never said, and I will always contend, that he has been the most pro-LGBT president ever. But we also know that that bar is not very high. I mean, let's be honest. Who are we comparing him to? George Bush? Bill Clinton? I mean, you know, that's not a very high bar.
Well, the thing about it is that, I mean, this may not be the most politically correct thing to say, and a lot of people out there, especially black ones, may hate me for this. You know, being black myself, a lot of black people thought that he is going to be the black president, and a lot of people thought that he was going to bring about so much change in the political system. And to a certain degree, he's brought a lot of things to light, or there have been a lot of things brought to light that probably would have stayed hidden had he not accepted the office. But here's the thing. I think those people who are on the left believe that he was a left-leaning person, when there's been no evidence to support that. Barack Obama has always been a centrist. And that's the reason why the Republicans have failed so deeply and consistently in their attempts to discredit him. Barack Obama has always been a centrist. He's always played to the center. He shall continue to play for the center. And while he's taken heat for things that have been going on for 20, 30, some odd years, even in the Bush administration, he's, let's face it, our rights, as well as any of the real domestic issues, until this November election comes up, we're not really going to see that much. We're not really going to see that much movement. And we still have the Supremes to decide on gay marriage. Don't even go there. You and I have talked the same talk about gay marriage being the stop all and end all of the so-called LGBT community. I'm sick and tired of that too. But you can't have all of this and then expect that to happen too. I mean,
well, wait a minute now. Wait a minute. Hang on. Because, you know, let's not forget that this isn't stuff that we suddenly came up with and said, we're going to push you on this. He campaigned on this stuff. I mean, these were promises that he made before he became president. And I think it's fair to say, hey, look, you campaigned on this. You made this promise when you asked for my vote. And here we are 5 years later, and you haven't delivered.
Well, yeah. I can appreciate that, but I submit to you a line from everything I always needed to learn about, anything I needed to learn about life, I learned from Star Trek. Having is not so pleasing a thing as wanting. It is not logical, but it is often true. Barack Obama thought a lot of things before he set foot in that office. So did Jimmy Carter back when he took office. And he doesn't say how that man aged less than 3 months after he took the damn office. Now, I'm not saying that I agree that executive order should not be signed. But we know that the body politic is not always expedient. And while we have all the so-called pundits and everything playing everything else on how what's important to them to get their ratings, and we have the people on the left saying what's important to get their supporters out and dump their money into, and we got the people on the right trying to cling onto this stuff from medieval times, the man is completely doing the best he can, and he's holding his own.
That's where I take issue, Dion, because I say that if he was really doing the best he could, he would sign that executive order. And that's where I say he does not need Congress. He does not need anyone else. So when somebody tells me, oh, he's doing the best he can, I say no. He's got something he can do with the stroke of his pen right now, today. And he hasn't done it. And that to me says he's not doing the best that he can. He's doing what he feels comfortable doing, what's convenient for himself and his party.
I don't think that's a fair assessment.
Why not?
I mean, because let's face it, he realized the party was not supporting him after the first 6 months after he's been in there. Okay, let's be real now. They had the supermajority, and when he wanted to get the Affordable Care Act passed, where were the damn Democrats? It took Olympia Snow and a couple of people who we don't even know of to get that passed. Where did Olympia Snow go? She's gone because she's sick and tired of stupid people in her own party and in the Democratic Party who don't understand that in the world where there are many people of many different perspectives and many different understandings of what life is, that there is one thing that is the great equalizer. That word and that thing is compromise. We have not seen it. We have never seen a nation so polarized. And in the midst of that polarization, You can't expect like the Red Sea parting, and essentially that's what that would be, the Red Sea parting. I mean, you can't expect it. I don't think that it's fair to expect it. I have a personal stake in this, as do you, and as do many people, and I agree that the right thing to do would be to sign it, be done with it. he doesn't have that much to lose. But
I mean, if he didn't get nailed on coming out for gay marriage, I can't see how coming out for the right to work is going to hurt him politically any more than that.
Oh, come on. You know, and I know that Joe Biden pulled him into gay marriage before he was ready to do it. I know it. He knows it. The whole damn country knows it. The pundits don't want to talk about it because they feel comfortable with there's that crazy.
I agree, but that's not an excuse for failing to act on ENDA and on the executive order. One, because of one, does not make it okay to refuse to make good on promises that he was making when he was campaigning for president. And by the way, I want to just throw this in because this just hit the Huffington Post like while we were on the air. It seems that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has announced that he will co-sponsor the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is a big deal. So I want to give credit where credit is due. This is brand new. It just hit Huffington Post while we've been on the air. Apparently, he is going to co-sponsor, which I don't believe he usually does because he's Senate Majority Leader. And so this is a big deal. This is a big deal. And so yeah, he gets
credit. I believe it when I see it. And the only reason that Harry Reid is doing that is because he believes, like I do, there's a snowball's chance in hell of it passing out of Congress, much less out of the Senate. He has nothing to gain and he has nothing to lose.
I think it might very well survive a Senate vote, but I don't think it's going anywhere in the House because it's never going to get past John Boehner.
Which is the same thing as if he had done nothing. Again, like I said, it's nothing to lose.
But I would disagree with you there on one point. I don't think it's like he's done nothing, because what it does is it gives us an opportunity to see exactly who the problems are. Who is not willing to vote for this? Where are the votes? Where do the activists need to concentrate their efforts? Where are these people? Put them on record.
Where the hell have they been for 25 and 30 years?
Ain't nothing new.
And as much as I'm not particularly a fan of Barney Frank told them what to do 5 and 10 years ago. They need to stop all of this protesting, all of these parties and crap, begging money from every poor Tom, Dick, and Harriet out there, especially in queer space where it's really gotten to ungodly proportions. They need to get off their asses, write some letters and some emails to these Congress people. They need to study those committees. They need to hit them 24/7, 365. Now, if they did that, a lot of stuff would change. But the reason that it's not going to get out of the Senate is because we haven't had that much change in the Senate. We haven't had that much change in the Senate since the first time ENDA came up. But what we've had some change in is the House. And as you said, Boehner may have the title leader of the House, but let's be for real here. John Boehner ain't controlled the House since Obama got reelected. And he knows it, and the whole damn world knows it. That's
right,
why the Republican
which makes
Party
it even worse when he tries to argue that end is the way that we should go, and he's using that as an excuse not to sign the executive order. Because as you just said, he knows better. And what kills me, and that's what angers me, because it's an insult to our intelligence.
Becky, that's it. I mean, he can't be a one-issue president. And right now, the man is inundated from all ends, and there are many things that this man promised. But this is a man whose position is tied up in his own legacy and his own destiny. And I don't think that his destiny is, while he started the conversation about queer issues, about our issues, in ways that other presidents haven't. And as you, I freely admit that the bar doesn't have to be that high. But the thing, but we're talking about legacies of histories. There, I'd never thought that I'd live to see in all 56 of my years that I'd see a black face sitting in the Oval Office. To see that he got there twice is something. He's got some things to do, and it has to be for all the people. I wish that I would be some of the people that puts at the priority list. But I think that we have to sacrifice too. And I think it sucks that we have to do it, but I think that's what it's calling for.
I'm going to have to disagree with you just on there, because you know what? I think we've sacrificed long enough. I think it's time for the Democratic Party and President Obama to start acting like the leaders that they promised us that they were going to be. I think our community has sacrificed both in money and votes and in a lot of other things more than our share. And I think it's time for them to start putting up. Dion, I want to thank you so much for calling in. We got to go to a break, but I want to thank you for calling in. I agree with a lot of what you said. But again, I think we deserve more.
I think we ought to get up off of our butt and do something too.
I agree. That I agree with. All right. Thank you, Dion. We're going to go, and we're going to go to break. All right. All right, everybody. We are going to take a quick break here. We have got, what have we got? I know I said it before. Brilliant Red from Venus to Mars. We'll see you in about 4.5, gang.
Ha ha, your mushrooms are gone.
Oh, hello, you're back.
I am back. Hello.
I'll tell you to go there
back
through our
Skype.
We got
the last few minutes. Boy, what a smoking hot show tonight.
Dion is such a welcome guest on this show. She doesn't agree with everything you say, and that is an amazing thing to hear that difference in opinion play
out. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, you know, far be it from me to say that everybody agrees with everything I say. If there's anything I've learned doing this for 10 years, that ain't true. That'll never be true. The only person I agree with 100% of the time is me. Okay? I mean, honestly, and that's what it's all about. It's about having the discussion. It's about, you know, everybody's got a different opinion, I hear, and this is and it's important. And I agree with a lot of what Dion said. I do think, though, that Barack Obama can do more. He absolutely can do more. I don't think that, say, you know, I mean, we're not talking about something that's that radical here. I mean, we're talking about the kind of executive order that other presidents have done in the past, Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson, you know, to advance the cause. And then the big legislated law came afterwards. Look at integration of African Americans or other racial minorities into the military. Harry Truman passed an executive order. Then later on, okay, the same thing with Johnson and federal federal employment and federal contractors as far as race, religion, ethnicity. That was an executive order. And then we got the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That's the way this has been done in the past. And what kills me, what annoys me, what bothers me more than any other single factor here is that we still to this day have not gotten a direct and honest answer as to why. Why? Because let's be honest, we know that the argument, oh, well, we're waiting for ENDA to, you know, magically happen. We know it's bullshit. We know it's bullshit. And that argument is bullshit. We know this because we read newspapers, because we know that John Boehner isn't going to bring this up for a vote. And if he does, it's highly unlikely that it will pass. I mean, that's the part of this that bothers me, because what it seems like Barack Obama is doing is just driving this whole thing into a ditch and saying, oops, sorry, well, I'm going to catch a cab. You guys are on your own. You know, I mean, that's what I think is going on here, because that's exactly what happened in 2009. He remained absolutely silent while Democrats threw us under the bus again, just made these promises and then just ignored them. I mean, how many times did we hear former health, education, labor and pensions chairman George Miller promise that he was going to bring ENDA up for a vote in his committee? At least seven times that I know of, probably more. Those are just the ones I know of that I actually tracked. And he just didn't do it. Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, same thing. Yes, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Oops, sorry, we ran out of time. So sorry. I mean, and I don't see how anything that we're seeing here now is any different. I just don't see it. Now, again, I am entirely encouraged to see Harry Reid signing out as a co-sponsor of ENDA. Now, that's significant, is he is now the 50th co-sponsor of this bill. Okay, 50 out of 100 senators are on the bill, including some surprises like Heidi Heitkamp. You know, it's great to see, but it means nothing without a vote. It means nothing if it's never going to, in a million years, make it through the House or even get a vote in the House. That's where I have the problem. And what kills me is that we know Democrats had the chance to make this law in 2009. We know this. And they didn't do it. They squandered the opportunity to pander to rich folks on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And then we saw it again last year at the DNC when it was all marriage, 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 marriage. That's what we've been seeing. So if you want to change my opinion, you got to do something. You can't just say something. You have to do something. Talk minus action equals zero. That's what we have to say. All right, it looks like we are just about out of time. And oh my goodness, I think I'm going to fall down after this one. What a great show. Yes. I want to say thank you to Jennifer Finney Boylan. She was awesome. Thank you to Dion Stallworth for calling in. She was great, as always. And of course, thank you to Mr. Mike, who twirls my knob so I can twirl yours. And we will catch you. We will have no show next week. I will be at Netroots Nation, so no show next week. We will catch you in 2 weeks. Have a good night, everybody.